have back-to-school shopping to do, then you should make Macy's your first stop. Because Macy's has back-to-school styles from brands like Nike and Jordan, must-have denim from Levi's and Good American. And now, Macy's has Abercrombie Kids, too. It's all in one place, all at great prices. And here's another reason to come in. If you're already at Macy's and you saved so much, you could stop by the fragrance counter and pick up something for yourself, too. The best back-to-school styles are here now at Macy's.
AM 1340 and 98.3 FM KIHR. News Radio 1300 and 103.9 KACI. And GorgeRadio.com present the Mid-Columbia Today Show with Mark Bailey.
Mid-Columbia Today is brought to you by GorgeNet, Gorge Recovery Service, and Skyline Hospital.
Now, here's Mark Bailey.
And it is now 8:06 in the morning. I'm Mark Bailey. Good morning, Mid-Columbia Today, as it is a Monday, the 11th of August. Thanks for being with us. We embark on another week. Cameron Eisenberg is producing, and we've got a busy show this morning. First part of the show, Jacob Anderson is going to join us, Hood River White Salmon Bridge Authority Commissioner. We'll talk about a couple things that have been signed in recent weeks that has moved the bridge a little bit closer to a reality as far as getting a new bridge taken care of. Second half of the program, we are going to be joined by Port of the Dalles Executive Director Andrea Claus. So all that coming up on Mid-Columbia Today over the course of the next about, 1 hour or so. But first, as we always do, let us tell people what this day has meant and what it means at least to some people. And we could tell you that on this day in 1929, Babe Ruth became the first baseball player to reach 500 career home runs with a homer at Cleveland's League Park. This day in 1934, the first federal prisoners arrived at Alcatraz Island, a former military prison in San Francisco Bay. The island would be home to over 1,500 prisoners over the next 3 decades, including gangsters Al Capone and James Whitey Bulger, before the prison closed in 1963. 1949, President Harry S. Truman nominated General Omar Bradley to become the first chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. 1956, abstract painter Jackson Pollock died in an automobile accident on Long Island, and that was at the age of 44. 1965, rioting that claimed 34 lives and lasted 6 days broke out in the Watts neighborhood of Los Angeles. 1972, the last U.S. ground combat troops in South Vietnam left to return to the U.S. 1973, at a house party in the Bronx, 18-year-old DJ Kool Herc began extending the musical breaks of his records he was playing and speaking over the beat. This marked the unofficial birth of hip-hop music, according to this. I don't really have any great authority on what was printed out from the Associated Press. There may be musical historians who debate this. 1992, in the Mall of America, the nation's largest shopping entertainment center, opened in Bloomington, Minnesota. 1997, President Bill Clinton made the first use of the historic line item veto, rejecting 3 items in spending and tax bills. The Supreme Court later struck down the veto as unconstitutional. And in 2014, Academy Award-winning actor and comedian Robin Williams died in Tiburon, California, at the age of 63. Days for today, not a whole lot for you. It is annual medical checkup day today, and it is son and daughter day today. For our food, it's National Raspberry Tart Day today, and it's National Panini Day today. I'm not sure a hot grilled sandwich is what I'm thinking of it when it's going to be 100 today. I think it's a little cooler. Maybe a salad, something like along those lines. But anyway, that's what we've got for what it's worth, which may not be a whole lot. 8:09, Jacob Anderson coming up next.
I am Christine Douglas. I work here in patient services at Skyline Health. My main job is registration and answering any questions our patients have. I know when people are here, they're here because they're in pain and they need help. At Skyline, we treat every patient as an individual. I'm here to serve because these are my people, my friends, my kids, and my neighbors. I'm reminded every day of how lucky I am to work in such a close, caring, and beautiful community. I am Skyline.
Jan from Toyota here with live coverage of end of summer fun at Toyota's national sales event with my special guest, Eli Manning.
Thanks, Jan. Let's get into it.
Down by the lake for some fishing, we've got Eric in his Tundra. He throws his line and he's going long!
Heck of a team effort there. That Tundra got him exactly where he needed to be.
Sure was, Eli. Until next time, go Toyota!
See your participating Toyota dealer for details. Dealer inventory may vary. Event ends September 2nd. Toyota. Let's go places.
Hair design is more than style. It's a career that transforms lives. This fall, Gorge Academy is offering $3,000 scholarships to help you find your calling. Our hair design program gives you hands-on training, expert instruction, and the skills to thrive in an industry that's always evolving. Step into a world where creativity becomes your career. The beauty industry is thriving, and you belong in it. Don't wait. Take advantage of the amazing 25% off scholarship this fall term. Visit gorgeacademy.com for program details.
Some people just know they could save hundreds on car insurance by checking Allstate first. Like you know to check for your wallet first, before hitting the drive-thru.
$6.
Sorry, forgot my wallet. I have change, though. Here's 40 cents, another 40. Ooh, a bicentennial.
What's that?
Oh, gosh.
Checking first is smart. So check Allstate first for a quote that could save you hundreds. You're in good hands with Allstate.
Savings vary. Subject to terms, conditions, and availability. Allstate Fire and Casualty Insurance Company and affiliates, Northbrook, Illinois.
Mid-Columbia Today is a public affairs program of Bi-Coastal Media Columbia River, AM 1340 and 98.3 FM KIHR, News Radio 1300 and 103.9 KACI, and GorgeRadio.com. Now, back to Mark.
It is now 8:11 in the morning. We have with us on the telephone from the Hood River White Salmon Bridge Authority Board, Jacob Anderson joins us. Good morning, Jacob.
Good morning, sir.
Well, thank you for coming on the show. We appreciate it. And that'll be a good time to get a little more update on the bridge, because just in the last couple of weeks or so, actually it was 2 weeks ago, you're able to get a contract done, which moves you toward getting this bridge fully designed, doesn't it?
It does. We signed a contract with Kiewit for $53 million to get this thing fully designed. Usually when you come across these projects, your designer will take it to 90%, but we actually negotiated with Kiewit that we'll have a full signed set, sealed, stamped set of plans when we get done.
So obviously the $53 million comes from somewhere, and this curls back to the importance of the legislative session and what did come out of it in the end in both Washington and Oregon is you got the funding commitments that you wanted.
We did, yes. So in Washington, we are fully committed for $125 million. We were able to get another $50 million through the legislative session, and we can't give enough thanks to Senator King, Representative Stubbe, and our other delegation. Our new Senator Paul Harris was also instrumental in Washington in getting that across the finish line, as well as Kevin Waters as our rep. Mm-hmm.
So I mean, with this,
and then in Oregon, yeah, we got even better news. We mm-hmm. got $105 million out of the Oregon legislative session, and that was through a singular bill, so we were not part of the transportation package. And I believe the time frame just passed for the governor to veto it, and she did not have it on her list of vetoes. So we now have, over the next few years, access to the full $125 million in Oregon.
Mm-hmm. So that really gets the state contributions to this, those now really are nailed down, aren't they?
They are nailed down, yes. So in Oregon, that money's coming out of the lottery bonds, which is money that we know is going to be there and be available. Washington money is now programmed, and so it's programmed to be released each year. And so we're moving ahead, you know, right? If this was 2 years ago, mm-hmm. we would be fully funded.
Yeah,
you know, this bridge was originally going to be $500 million. We would now be fully funded if the price's tag hadn't went up.
Of course, price tags did go up, and now this turns us to the federal side and where you're at there right now.
So on the federal side, we still have our IMPRA grant award for $200 million. That money is getting pushed for release back until after October. And so we are still hoping to have access to a portion of that $200 million for design so that we can be using both state and federal dollars for design. But we also applied for the Bridge Infrastructure Program grant for $532 million, which if we can get that grant, we will be fully funded again, and we can continue to move forward.
What is the
construction?
What's the outlook on the Bridge Investment Program request at this time? Is there a timeline on when to expect an answer?
I believe it's Q1 of 26 is when they'll be coming out with their decisions. Mm-hmm. I think we're going to rank really high. We are east of the Cascades. We do have some Republican representation, you know, from our federal delegation. We are a bi-state bridge, which, you know, creates that federal nexus. And we have two states, right, that are both out putting money towards us. And so we have a really good chance of, I think, getting that grant.
Okay. And if you don't, this comes around again, doesn't it?
Yes, it does come around again. And if we don't get it, we're going to have to wait a year and apply again, which we still have the availability to do because design is expected to last until 2027. It's about an 18-month design window.
And that's where I was going to circle around to when we talk about the design, how long is it going to take to get that design in place. I assume there really wouldn't be much you could do in terms of construction prep anyway, even if you don't get the federal money in early 2026 while you're waiting for that design. Maybe I'm making a wrong assumption, but would there be anything you could do if the money comes through in fiscal year 2026 from the federal side to move this along a little bit concurrent with the design process?
So this was a progressive design construction project. And so we were originally going to be in design while in the water and starting construction because you don't have to have the full design done to start your piers in the water. And so yes, if they came forward with the money and we got access to the money quickly, yeah, we could start our pre-buys. You know, there's going to be millions of dollars in steel that we need to get a manufacturer working on. Like, there's a lot of processes that could be going concurrently that would save time and save a lot of money in the long run. Which would be amazing, right?
Yeah, and that's
you know, when we look at our IMPRA grant award, we were awarded IMPRA at the beginning of 2024, and here we are 8 months into 2025, and we still don't have access to the money.
Yeah.
So there's the time frame of getting grant access at the federal level.
Have you heard any word on that particular grant in terms of gaining the access?
So we are still working on getting access to that grant. We also had $8 million in CDS, that's the Congressionally Directed Spending, from our Oregon and Washington federal delegation that was a part of that grant. We're trying to get access to that so we can move forward with our tribal mitigation monies as well as buying a right-of-way. It's been a long negotiation. We've had to change the Oregon STIP, which is the program that Oregon Highways has for their allocation of projects. There's just so much that goes into these grant agreements. It's mind-boggling. It really is.
With all that, you mentioned that there are things that if you get the Fed dollars, the $532 million in fiscal year 2026 in that first quarter, get the word get positive word on it. I would think also, would that help get maybe some of these costs locked in? Because we watched how quickly this thing escalated in about a two-year time frame. I would think right now that there's got to be some thought of how do we lock this in?
Right. So, you know, the only time you can, like, lock in your steel prices is when you start putting in a purchase order and get those agreements in place. And the sooner we do that, the better, right?
Mm-hmm.
We don't know what any steel tariffs are going to have on impacts. And, you know, the cost increase most of that was through, you know, actually having a design, you know, getting to closer to a 30% design where we know what the actual cost would be versus our, you know, original estimate of $500 million, which was, you know, it had a less than 10% design to it.
So with all these factors, I think people probably ask you oftentimes, you know, kind of a bottom line here. What's realistic for having a bridge completed? What's the realistic time frame now?
You know, if we get access to the money and we get the 532 and we can negotiate with Kiewit and, you know, get started and get that, you know, we could be in the water in 2027 and, you know, it's a 4-year timeline. So we would be having access to the bridge in 2030, late 2030, 2031.
Right. And I imagine basically if you don't get the right answer from the federal government in this first quarter of 2026, I imagine it's every year that gets backed up, it's a year back up on the time frame, isn't it?
It certainly is. You know, we also have to work with the in-water work windows because you can only drill in the river certain times of the year. And so, yeah, and we all know what the price of everything continues to climb. And you look at just, you know, the 3% inflation, if we can keep it at 3%, that's a lot of money on $1 billion.
Yeah, it is. It becomes quite a, you know, a number to try to hit here. It just seems like every time we think we're to the point of, okay, this is looking pretty good, the money seems to be getting into play, something happens. And that's when the delays happen. And this truly is the example of time is money, isn't it? In terms of what it costs this project.
You remember when everyone was balking 10 years ago when we thought it was going to be $350 million?
The good old
and
days.
There was an unsolicited offer that came in, and we're like, oh, my God, that's so much money. I would wish we would have signed on the dotted line back then. Now, don't we?
Yeah. Well, yeah, of course, you don't know at the time. It was hard to project, especially some of the factors with the increases in finances today. I mean, you just couldn't have predicted it 10 years ago. So it's a, but so in the interim here, while you wait for this money, obviously the design part is the big step that you take. What else goes on in the interim while you wait for the answer for first quarter 2026?
Oh, we're, you know, not only are we designing, we're still negotiating our tribal MOA agreements. We are hoping to finalize our NEPA ROD, our record of decision, you know, that environmental document that we've been working on for 6+ years. We've got a lot of other things that we're doing at the same time. You know, we've still got to do more borings in the river for our geotechnical. We've got to wrap up negotiations with the port on getting their buildings moved. We've got to get the right-of-way on both the Oregon and Washington side complete. Like, we've got a full team working all the time trying to get this thing done.
Yeah, you mentioned the NEPA record of decision. I think, don't you have to have that in place before really you can start to work toward the permit side?
Well, there's the next thing, yes. Once you get your ROD, then you can start on the permitting process. And we all know how difficult that can be right now, considering a lot of those permits are federal permits, and we've seen what's happened to the federal workforce the first 8 months of this year. And so we've got potentially some delays there, but we're doing everything we can to keep all of our federal partners appraised of where we're at so that when we start pulling that trigger to get all our permits, they're ready to go.
Jacob Anderson is on the Hood River White Salmon Bridge Authority. He's one of the commissioners. I think you guys have a vacancy right now, don't you?
We do. We actually have two vacancies in Washington. We had a full voting member, Marla Kiefler, the mayor of White Salmon, resigned. She's just got so many other projects going on right now. She's still helping us on the side. And then we also had Seth Gilchrist, who is an alternate member who ended up moving away. So we have two positions that are currently open that the Klickitat County Commissioners are currently accepting applications for. So if anybody's interested, they can go on the county website and go look under the Volunteers Needed section and get an application. And on the Oregon side, we're fully full. You know, these are volunteer positions that seem to take up a lot of people's time.
Well, usually when you're talking about dealing with a billion-dollar project, it does take a lot of time. I'm sure it does. Jake, thanks for doing this again. We appreciate it. I'm sure we'll be talking to you guys again down the line.
Absolutely. Have a great day, Mark.
Yeah, have a good day. 8:24 in the morning on Mid-Columbia Today. We'll come back, take a look at the news right after this.
Hi, everybody. This is Anthony Lucia, your Pendleton Extreme Bulls Tour finale announcer. The event that crowns the Extreme Bulls Tour champion will take place during the 115th Pendleton Roundup this September. The PRCA, the Pendleton Roundup, and Happy Canyon are excited to present the Extreme Bulls Tour finale, presented by Coors Banquet and your local Coors distributor, Columbia Distributing, in the world-famous Happy Canyon Arena. The Extreme Bulls Tour finale will be a two-day event scheduled for September 8th and 9th. It will feature the top PRCA bull riders, each having earned their place by qualifying through the semifinal events, all leading up to the thrilling tour finale inside the world-famous Happy Canyon Arena. Get your tickets now as they won't last long for this epic championship event that will crown the Extreme Bulls Tour champion. Buy tickets now at PendletonRoundup.com for the PRCA Extreme Bulls Tour finale. On with the show, and let her buck.
Did you know recycling is offered free of charge to Klickitat County residents? Even curbside pickup is offered free, making recycling easy. A lot of common items are still being recycled, but what exactly is accepted? We should all know that diapers and greasy pizza boxes are not accepted, right? Well, the contamination audit showed otherwise. The new Waste Wizard search tool on the Solid Waste webpage will help you decide how to dispose of items correctly. Klickitat County Solid Waste and Republic Services thank you for recycling right.
Warm days are back in the Gorge. Don't wait for the heat to spike before checking your AC. I'm Kimberly from A&E Plumbing, Heating, and Air. Now is the perfect time for your AC maintenance. We offer exclusive memberships including HVAC, monitoring, generators, and plumbing to keep your whole home running smoothly year-round. Is your system ready for replacement? As the 2024 Highest Residential Participation Award winner from Energy Trust of Oregon, we'll help you maximize rebates and incentives to return your home to peak performance and keep cash in your pocket. Call us, A&E Plumbing, Heating, and Air.
Coffee for Mid-Columbia Today guests is provided by Hood River Coffee Roasters, the Gorge's local coffee roasters, on Tucker Road on the Heights in Hood River.
8:26 in the morning on Mid-Columbia Today. Port of the Dalles Executive Director Andrea Claus will be with us in studio here in just a few moments. First, let's take a look at what's in the news. The discharge of the Columbia River from the Dalles Wastewater Treatment Plant returned to compliance with permit limits for E. coli as of Friday night. A statement from the city says the average of 5 samples taken throughout Thursday at the city discharge point to the river were within limits. The delay in reading out the test results due to the 24-hour incubation time the test requires. Recent Columbia River samples show that E. coli levels at the sample locations were well below bacterial criteria, set by the Oregon Department of Environmental Quality for Freshwater Recreation. Signs have been placed at locations of public river access on the Oregon shore of the Columbia River to warn of contaminated water were taken down Saturday morning. A 76-year-old Carson woman was flown to a Portland hospital after a Saturday afternoon motorcycle accident on Highway 142 in Klickitat County. According to a Washington State Patrol report, the woman was westbound on Highway 142 near milepost 10 at around 3:10 Saturday afternoon. The report says the motorcycle the woman was driving failed to negotiate a curve, struck the guardrail, and then she was ejected from the bike. Both the woman and the motorcycle came to rest on the right shoulder of the highway. The woman taken by life flight to Oregon Health Sciences University Hospital in Portland. No information on her condition. A Washington gun shop is taking its case against the state's ban on the sale of high-capacity ammunition magazines to the U.S. Supreme Court. Gators Custom Guns in Kelso filed a petition asking the High Court to review the state Supreme Court's decision in May upholding the controversial law. Supporters of the restriction see it as an important step for quelling gun violence. Walter Wentz, the Cowlitz County store's owner, told the Washington State Standard he hopes to convince the Supreme Court justices to, quote, do their job and not accept all these lower courts waving their finger at them. But a spokesperson for the state attorney general's office said the reforms are constitutional, as every court of appeals to review similar large-capacity magazine reforms has found. With hot temperatures over the next couple of days, the Oregon Health Authority recommending ways to prevent the likelihood of heat exhaustion or heat stroke. Stay in air-conditioned places if possible and limit sun exposure during the hottest parts of the day, typically from 10 in the morning to 5 in the afternoon. Schedule outdoor activities in the early morning or late evening. Use portable fans to bring in cooler air and push warmer air out of rooms and spaces, but don't use portable fans as the primary cooling source if indoor temperatures are above 90 degrees, because that can bring on heat stroke. People who don't have air conditioners can find cooler indoor air with friends or family or at designated cooling centers when available. Use cool compresses, misting, and cool showers and baths, and wear loose-fitting, lightweight, and light-colored clothing. Drink plenty of fluids, especially when working outside. Avoid alcohol or liquids with large amounts of sugar and limit caffeine intake. And never leave children or pets unattended in parked cars. Experts also advocate for knowing the signs of heat-related illness, including dizziness, sweating, nausea, and more. In serious cases of heat stroke, body temperatures can reach more than 103 degrees and are typically accompanied with a severe headache, confusion, or a loss of consciousness. And it's going to be highs today of 98 to 104 in the Hood River and the Dalles area. Hood River right now, the forecast for 100 degrees, the Dalles 101. Current temperature 73 degrees in both the Dalles and Hood River. It is 8:30 in the morning. More Mid-Columbia today right after this.
Hi, it's Melissa at Del Carpine Automotive. You know how long 10 minutes is? It's how long it takes me to wrangle my dog into the car most days. Yep. It's also how close we are to our old location. We are now neighbors to Adopt-A-Dog, just a quick drive up the hill. Same team, same top-notch service, and a bigger space to handle all makes and models. Have you been putting off getting the scheduled maintenance done on your vehicle? Come see us. At Del Carpine Automotive, no job is too big or too small. We work on them all, and we are family-owned and Columbia Gorge strong.
Must qualify for enrollment. Results may vary.
If you owe $10,000 or more in credit card debt, medical bills, or personal loans, help is here. As Americans continue to pile up astounding credit card debt levels with high interest rates to make ends meet, debt relief is being made available through national debt relief that could reduce a significant portion of what you owe if you qualify. For many, continuing to struggle making minimum monthly payments could take 25 or more years to pay off. National Debt Relief has already helped over 550,000 Americans reduce their debt by negotiating directly with their creditors. When you call, you'll be amazed at how much you can save and how quickly you can become debt-free. If you want off the debt treadmill, call National Debt Relief today. You don't need to declare bankruptcy, and you may qualify for significant debt relief. Call the relief hotline now to check what savings you may qualify for. Dial 800-278-4200. 800-278-4200. That's 800-278-4200.
What is your next success story? At University of Maryland Global Campus, you can succeed again. With more than 135 affordable online degrees and certificates to help you move your career forward. From cybersecurity and AI to healthcare and MBA, our programs help you build critical thinking, leadership, and communication skills that set you apart in today's job market. Apply now and save with no application fee through September 3rd. Visit umgc.edu to get started. Certified to operate in Virginia by CHEV.
Mid-Columbia Today is a public affairs program of Bi-Coastal Media Columbia River. AM 1340 and 98.3 FM KIHR. News Radio 1300 and 103.9 KACI. And GorgeRadio.com. Now, back to Mark.
8:32 in the morning. Port of the Dalles Executive Director Andrea Claus with us. Good morning, Andrea.
Good morning, Mark.
How are you doing today?
I am doing just great.
Going to be hot, I just mentioned.
It is going to be hot, yes.
Next couple days at least. But it's summer. That's when it's supposed to be hot.
Well, you know, it's funny because you were saying you have air conditioning in here. I think I just read some statistic that like 96% of buildings in the United States have air conditioning.
Didn't used to be that way. I mean, air conditioning in homes growing up in the Pacific Northwest was not common.
It was not common.
I'm not sure we had it in so my early houses as a child, I think maybe the last one was growing in high school, we did. But
right, and then people got like the window air conditioners, and that was like a, you know, everybody huddled in that one cold room.
Yeah, that was kind of, that was kind of the way it worked. I mean, you know, it was just that way, you know. We were also spent time in California a lot of the summer, so I was used to being in air conditioning.
Right.
As well, because you have, you know, Red Bluff, California is 100 degrees every day for 3 months, so you had to do that. But anyway.
So stay cool today, people.
I digress. Actually, I'm going to digress a little bit. I think Marty was here when you were here last month.
She was.
I was on vacation.
Yeah.
I'm going to do that again in a couple of weeks. But I was going to ask about coming out of the fire at the port area? Because you guys, I think at one point you were an evacuation level. I can't remember which.
We were, yes.
So how did you guys come out of all that?
So, you know, Mark, it's interesting. You know, people who know where the port offices are, like, you would think that we would not necessarily sort of be in the line of literal fire when things happen to the west of us. But yeah, the Rowena fire, you know, it just comes right down, came right down 84, right down through the gorge. And the port office, you know, did I think it was going to get to us? I don't know. You know, it got smoky and it, you know, you definitely get worried about it. We did a couple of years ago, we were, maybe we even got to a level 3 evacuation. And so we actually have an fire evacuation plan now. Mm-hmm. And, you know, on that plan, it's a one sheet piece of paper that has like 6 bullet points on it of the important things to grab from the office. And, you know, the number one is to grab the first minute book from the port when the port was first started, you know, in 1933. Mm. So we have this like beautiful leather bound minute book that we grab and then leave the office. So, you know, it's interesting because with COVID, I think we all now have the ability to work from home.
Yeah.
And so systems are set up, unlike, you know, when we had fires in years past, you would shut down the office and you would go home and there was really nothing that you could do. But today we, you know, for good or for bad, you know, we do have the ability to work from home. And so staff actually went home and, you know, again, you just sort of grabbed the things we could grab and went home and worked from home that day. But, you know, the biggest impact, Mark, was actually getting home. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right. So the fire started on Interstate 84. I live in Hood River. Mm-hmm. I had, you know, the big debate that everybody always has. It's like, okay, do you go over to 14 or do you go down to Dufour and go over 44 and come home on 35? I looked at the traffic. It didn't seem that bad over on 14. It took me 4 hours.
Yes, I've heard that story from people.
Yes. And so the impact of the fire for the port office, not so bad. For port staff, pretty terrible because, you know, trying to go 20 miles and it took 4 hours was pretty unbelievable.
Well, there just aren't many options in and out here. We talk about this more in the wintertime. There's 14, there's 84, or do you want to go around the mountain, which is a long trip in of itself.
Yep.
And I know Hood River, actually, we're going to talk about this tomorrow on the show, actually, when Allison Williams is here, Hood River County Administrator. We're going to talk about, one of the things we're going to talk about is Hood River is looking at what do we do with our traffic when these things happen?
Right.
Because Hood River just becomes gridlock immediately, and they did during the Rowena fire. When the bridge gets backed up, part of the freeway is closed, freeway traffic starts coming into town. It becomes a major problem.
Well, you know, and if you think about the winter, you know, it is interesting because in the wintertime, they will close 84 at Troutdale because there's a lot of services for trucks and parking in Troutdale.
Yep, there is.
And you would think that when there's like an emergency like we had with the Rowena fire, that could have also happened.
Yeah, I mean, I would imagine the smarter truckers also, if they were short of Troutdale going east and heard this, or going the other direction, wherever they might pick Rufus, we're going, okay, I'm pulling off. You know, I'm not going to try to do this. But you also, that went so fast, the fire.
Yes.
You had people from 18 to 44 miles, but there was nothing to avoid this. But let's move on to some other Port of the Dallas things. I kind of got off, off track a little bit there.
Well, there was a Port of the Dallas thing. We are prepared.
Right.
We do have an emergency contingent plan. Mm. And so, yeah. So, you know, don't like it when it happens, but I do feel like we're prepared for it.
The Dallas Community Outreach Team is headed off to D.C. again.
We are.
In September.
Yep.
So what's going to be the focus this time in what still is a very uncertain climate for trying to get money from the feds?
Yeah, and actually, as I was driving in on your radio station, I heard that President Trump has now sort of taken over operation of the police to make the city safer. It's going to be interesting. You know, I'd probably say this every time we go back because there's always something a bit chaotic going on in D.C. So, you know, so one of the big things that we're going to focus on is you probably remember that the community received a $21 million grant to redo one of the old schools in the Dalles and turn it into a child care and learning center.
Yep.
And because of the wording in that grant, it was one of the ones that a contract was signed in December, but in January, the money was pulled back because of whatever the language was in the contract that the new administration didn't like. So it's a really big project for the community. And, you know, we're just listening to Jacob Anderson talk about the bridge. And, you know, if you don't get the project built today, tomorrow it's going to be, I'm not going to say twice as expensive, but, you know, the numbers are going up pretty darn quickly.
They are. I mean, they are. I mean, there's just no question about it. I mean, we saw it basically did double to get to the point it is now in about 3 years.
Right.
For that bridge. I mean, and I would imagine for a project like we're talking about, this would have been at Chenoweth.
Yes.
It wouldn't take much to convince me you could double that in 2 or 3 years.
Right.
We're
so time is money.
Time is money.
And I think that is a story that we're going to be telling when we get to Washington, D.C., which is we've been working on this project, like many projects that take a lot of money. We've been working on this for a long time. We thought we were over the finish line to get this thing done, and we really need help from different agencies. And so, you know, one of the things we're going to do on this trip is go and talk to a variety of different agencies to see what money might be available, you know, coming out in the future for future grants. But also, the last time we were in D.C., which was in March, there was some talk about, so Community Change is the grant that this money came through, that grant may be reissued with different wording, different requirements. And so, you know, the question is that being reissued? Should we reapply for it? So, you know, so that's sort of one of them. You know, the other one, Mark, is that, you know, for the port, we've been, you know, about this project, which is a pie in the sky project, which is rebuilding the big old wharf down in the Dalles. And just kind of trying to start telling the story about that, because, again, it's going to be a lot of money. We need to start telling the story today so we can start identifying where those funds might come from in the future.
I'm going to back up to the $21 million project at Chenoweth. Has anything been heard since this went sideways? And this could range from agencies to, frankly, our congressman, you know, the district congressman, to offer some insight about being able to get this back on track in some manner. Because I would have been on the phone with that congressman, basically chewing a new one, for lack of a better term, on this first about you better get this back. And I'm just wondering if there's been any sort of pushback.
So I'm going to say I don't know.
Okay.
I expect the answer is yes. I will say that one of the challenges coming from Oregon, going to Washington, D.C., is that, you know, Oregon is one of the states that did file a lawsuit against the federal government for a number of contracts that were canceled and funding that's not coming to the state.
And you know what? I can't cancel contracts. Businesses that get acquired can't cancel contracts that the previous owner.
Right.
I mean, you know, it's a darn good argument as far as I'm concerned.
So there is that point. And, you know, again, you know, with this specific project in the Dalles, there was a signed contract last year, again, prior to the new administration. So, so yes, you know, certainly, you know, that's a question I'm sure that has been asked. I think, you know, one of the things that the community outreach team likes to do is to really put a face to the issue. And so, you know, you're looking at your legislators right in the eye and saying, what is going on? We've been working on this. You got this across the finish line for us. Mm-hmm. How do we continue to move this ahead? So, you know, sometimes it's a little bit better than just a phone call or an email. So,
so you'll be doing that mid-September.
Yep.
Who all's going this time? I know you're going, obviously.
Yep. So I'm going. The city manager, Matthew Klebs, is going. Commissioner Scott Hagee is going from Wasco County. And then two port commissioners, Greg Wiest, who has been on many of the trips with us, and then Stacey Coburn, who is the new port commission president, is going to be joining us as well. And she's actually going to bring a great perspective, because one of the things that the port is going to be talking about, so funding, you know, sort of, you know, in the future, but a lot of policy around agriculture.
Yeah.
And, you know, what's going on, you know, with telling the stories again about how the tariffs and immigration policies and work visa policies are affecting both cherry and wheat in our region. So Stacy has a background in agriculture, so she will be a great voice to that policy.
And it has had a major impact on cherries in this area. Well, quite the cherry harvest. That's very well documented at this point.
Yep.
Let's see here. Actually, you're also going to be doing, I'm going to skip over one here, the Dallas Economic Opportunity Analysis. You're going to be part of that group that's working on that. And this gets back to the buildable lands conversation that we've had for the Dalles for a long, long time.
Mark, I think it's time you and I retire because some of these issues just keep coming back again and again.
Yes, they do. But here we are again.
Here we are again.
And I'll say, where does this stand right now? Because I haven't thought about this in a while. I mean, but if I remember where we last left, it was the analysis was not taking into account everything that truly be buildable and also taking into account things that aren't buildable.
Correct. That's a great summary of it. You know, sort of just to quickly recap sort of. So first of all, why is this important? Mm-hmm. It's important because the state of Oregon requires cities to have a 20-year supply of buildable land. Yeah. So that's why it's important, why it needs to be done. Mm-hmm. The city did undertake a study several years ago now, and some of the pieces that came that were included in it, which I will say I was not very happy about. One was, well, you don't need industrial land inside the city of the Dalles because there's industrial land available in Dallesport, Washington. Mm-hmm. Now, that does not help with buildable lands in the state of Oregon. It does not help with our tax base.
Now, who said that?
That was one of the pieces of one of the findings that came out in the study from a couple years ago.
Now who did the study? Was that
It was a contractor.
Oh, contractor then. This wasn't from DLCD, which I'm going,
I didn't realize
we had annexed part of Washington, and which would come as a shock to folks in Washington, too. So I was just trying to who actually, or did it come from the Gorge Commission, which point we gone, okay, I understand that, but that didn't help us with the state of Oregon in one way or the other.
Yeah, no, it was a hired contractor, a consultant who came in and who did the work. Yeah. You know, the other thing was, is that at the time, Google had just purchased a large portion of Northwest Aluminum, so the big old aluminum smelter. But they had not started to build on it. And so even though they owned that with a plan to build on it, we had to include a really large portion of industrial land in that initial study. And then to your point, Mark, there were other things that people had heartburn with, which was like there were like playgrounds. And I think a cemetery was included, just very random things. Okay. So thankfully, the city council did not adopt that because they saw that it was faulty as well. So here we are today. We are redoing it now because Google has, you know, anybody who's been to the Dalles knows that they have built, you know, another big facility on the old Northwest Aluminum site. And so that land can come off. There's some other parcels that have been developed. We've also, and I'm sure people have been on your show talking about it, but the floodplain has now expanded.
Yes.
And so there is less buildable land because of the new floodplain designation. And so we're able to pull some of that land out. Interestingly, so those are all good things. You know, interestingly, one of the problems that I still have had with the current analysis is that having 5 1-acre parcels is not the same as having 1 5-acre parcel. So if you think about it, you could have a 5-acre part, 1 acre, 1 acre, 1 acre, 1 acre, each separated by a street. But when you, in aggregate, when you add them up, it seems like you have a 5-acre parcel.
Well, unless I own all of them.
And they're next to each other.
Yes.
You do not have a 5-acre
no.
parcel. So we are trying to go through really parcel by parcel, Mark. It's actually quite a bit of work saying, okay, this is a quarter acre here. Mm-hmm. This is not buildable. Mm-hmm. I am hoping, you know, that when this work is done, that we will have a much more accurate, reflective number of our available industrial land. Mm-hmm. And then the second part of this is looking at what do we want our projection to be? So what... Mm-hmm. How much land do we want in 5 years, 10 years, 15 years? And so they gave us a range from low amount of acreage to a high amount of acreage. And I will say that the group that I've been part of, we've really been advocating for the highest number that they have presented to us for both for all residential, commercial, and industrial, because you know, you might as well shoot for like that high target and not just sort of the low target. And so we'll see where it comes out. But it's, you know, it is a lot of work looking at the maps and being like, yeah, this one just doesn't really make sense if mm-hmm. you know, because as you know, being boots on the ground is a lot different than trying to do an analysis from your office.
And that's been the downfall of a lot of maps I've seen lately come along here, but for other subjects too, is a reliance more on, frankly, GPS, et cetera, rather than, which is a great tool. I don't want to knock it. But, you know, like when the one wildfire map came out and they had, as a medium to high fire danger, a parcel that was actually a lake.
Right.
And then you wonder why it loses credibility. And that's the part, that's where the boots on the ground come in, where you got to take a look at these things in a holistic perspective with realism for what the property is.
Right, because a two-dimensional map is a two-dimensional map.
Yep.
And it doesn't really show all of those other conditions.
Mm-hmm. Now, why, though, this is important, we should get to this here real quick. I only got about 4 or 5 minutes left here. I want to get to one other little thing here.
Yep.
This curls back also to urban growth boundary, that issue.
Absolutely.
That's been out there. And without this, without a good, solid buildable lands analysis that's credible and accurate, the idea that you're going to get a UGB expansion, however you get it, is probably not realistic.
That's right. You know, the city of the Dalles, really any urban area inside the National Scenic Area, has not expanded their urban growth boundary since 1986 when the Scenic Act was implemented.
Really, because you can't.
Because you can't. And if you look at really every other community in Oregon, you know, they've all been growing. I mean, maybe not all, but the majority of them certainly have been growing. So I feel like we've been doing a really good job working on infill. And yes, so this work that we're doing will provide that foundation to help, you know, sort of move to the next step, which is, okay, this is what we need for a 20-year buildable supply of land. This is required by the state of Oregon. Here's our plan, and here's the data to support it.
Mm-hmm. So that this is going to be obviously a long-term project here. It's going to take a while. Last thing we want to get to in the couple minutes we have left is just where the port's going to meet here in this month, because you're not going to meet in the Dalles.
We're not. You know, so Duffer is the other city inside the port district, and we do try to go to Duffer twice a year. And so we will be meeting there this week, I guess. Mm-hmm. We're going to be meeting there this week. We'll be meeting at the Barlow Ranger Station. They open it up for us. They have a meeting room in there. The meeting will start at 5:30, and we invite community members to come and to speak to us. So we try to have the port business be a really short part of the meeting, because we are in Duffer. We really want to hear from Duffer. So we'll hear from the mayor and the city recorder, the new superintendent of schools down there. We've invited somebody from parks. We've invited Commissioner Hagee from Wasco County. Let's see.
Probably all the Duffer City Council and mayor, I would assume, things like that.
Yeah. And so, you know, just trying to get updates on projects. Mm-hmm. You know, we do try to help as we can down there. They've had two big water and wastewater projects for the last couple of years, so hopefully getting an update on that. But it's always great to meet in Duffer, and there's always a lot going on down there.
Mm-hmm. So again, when is that going to be?
Wednesday.
Okay, Wednesday, 5:30.
5:30.
And where was it one more time?
Barlow Ranger Station.
All right. So people can go check that out. 8:52 in the morning. We didn't have time to get to the marina. We'll get to the marina next time.
Okay.
Port of the Dalles Executive Director, Andrea Claus. Andrea, thanks for doing this.
Thanks, Mark.
And we'll come back and begin to wrap things up after this.
Hi, I'm Jackie from Hawks Ridge Assisted Living. I know how hard it is to make the decision for your aging parents. It's emotional, overwhelming, and full of uncertainty. But you're not alone. At Hawks Ridge, we're more than just caregivers. We are a second family. Our warm and welcoming community ensures your loved ones are safe, engaged, and truly at home. Come take a tour and see the difference. Visit Hawks Ridge today and let us help you navigate this important decision with confidence.
Who's got the best beer selection in the gorge?
Beer selection? I don't know. Who?
Marge's Outdoor Store, that's who.
Marge's Outdoor Store in Bingen? I love those guys. But I thought they sold...
Beer, great beer selection.
Now I remember. Marge's was voted best beer selection in the gorge.
Marge's Outdoor Store wins beer award.
Marge's is located just east of downtown Bingen.
Beer.
The threat of wildfire poses a growing risk to Oregonians, and recent wildfires have provided some important lessons. You can prepare now by taking three important steps. Step 1. Contact your insurance company to make sure you have the right amounts and types of coverage. Step 2. Create a home inventory by taking photos or videos of your possessions in each room of your home. Step 3. Gather and make copies of important identifying and financial documents. Store them in the cloud or another secure location. These three actions can help you and your community be more resilient in the face of wildfire. Be wildfire ready by being insurance ready. Visit dfr.oregon.gov/preparenow to learn how. This message brought to you by the Oregon Division of Financial Regulation, the Oregon Association of Broadcasters, and this station.
Right arm, right leg.
Left leg, left arm.
Both legs above the knee.
Both legs, part of my left hand.
Lost both my legs in Iraq.
These 9/11 veterans are just a few of the heroes we serve at Homes for Our Troops. For nearly 2,000 severely injured veterans, everyday life has become filled with barriers. So we build specially adapted homes with features like wheelchair access, roll-in showers, and pull-down cabinets that allow them to function independently and focus on their recovery and family. This life-changing gift of freedom is provided mortgage-free to these veterans, thanks to our donors and supporters. But we need you to join us, too, in completing this important mission. Please visit hfotusa.org and help build homes and rebuild lives.
Tune in weekday mornings at 8:05 and keep up with community events and issues with the Mid-Columbia Today Show on the Mid-Columbia's news leaders, AM 1340 and 98.3 FM KIHR, and News Radio 1300 and 103.9 KACI.
Mid-Columbia Today is brought to you by GorgeNet, Gorge Recovery Service, and Skyline Hospital. And we welcome you back at 8:55 in the morning on Mid-Columbia Today. And I just closed the window there. I was going to tell you what's coming up the rest of the week on this program. And now I'm going to reopen it because now I'll be able to do so. Tomorrow on this show, Hood River County and Wasco County with the subjects. We'll talk to Hood River County Commission Chair Jennifer Ewer and Administrator Allison Williams. We'll talk about the governor's proposed transportation package, how that might help locally. And we're also going to talk a little bit, I kind of mentioned this here a few minutes ago on the show. We're going to talk some about, there has been some discussion about, you probably have noticed, I know Cameron did trying to get back to the Dalles in the, during the fire situation, that when I-84 gets shut down, or 14 gets shut down, but especially I-84 between Hood River and the Dalles for emergencies like the Rowena fire, Hood River basically does then an impersonation of the Los Angeles freeway system. As in, there's a whole lot of cars and nobody's going anywhere. And that's not good for emergencies. So there's been some discussion about how to deal with that. So we're going to talk to them about that. Also, Wasco County Commissioner Scott Hagee will join us. We'll probably talk about the transportation issue as well with him. Wednesday on the show, Hood River County's Emergency Manager, Charles Young, is going to join us. Upper Hood River Valley preparedness is going to be the subject of a public meeting on Thursday, at Solera Brewery in Parkdale at 5:30, specifically wildfire preparedness. So we'll talk to Charles about that, and we'll talk Hood River County Health Department, which means Darren Ryan will probably be with us. Thursday on the show, we'll talk Providence Hood River. Friday on the show, Marty Cantola-Dane is going to join us, and we'll talk to her. So all that coming up on Mid-Columbia Today over the course of the next few days. Some things going on in the area. I mentioned it's fair time. Wasco County Fair and Rodeo in Tie Valley Thursday through Sunday. Klickitat County Fair in Goldendale Thursday through Sunday. Skamania County Fair in Stevenson. That'll be Wednesday through Saturday. Of course, remember that fairground's right on the Columbia River. Just a beautiful, beautiful location to hold the fair. It's just as scenic as any fairgrounds can possibly be at that location. It is absolutely beautiful there. So have a chance. Get out to the fairs and enjoy them. Also, we'll mention here before we roll on out of here, Families in the Park will be continuing Thursday evening at 7, Jackson Park in Hood River, presented by the Hood River Lions Club and the Gorge Community Foundation. This week, it's the Red Light Romeos. They're playing 70s music. Night before, Wednesday evening at 6, Dallas City Park, it's Music and Magic in the Park. Didgeridoo Down Under is going to be the performance Wednesday at the Dell City Park. Out of time for Cameron. I'm Mark Bailey. We'll talk to you again on Tuesday.
The Mid-Columbia Today Show is a public affairs presentation of Bi-Coastal Media Columbia River. The views expressed on the program are not necessarily those of the station, parent company, or of the sponsors. We welcome your suggestions for future shows. Call us at 888-786-1511. Thanks for listening to Mid-Columbia Today.
Chronic absenteeism is on the rise.
Sophia A, absent.
Julio M, absent.
These absences are often due to the absence of crucial needs, like food, transportation, and healthcare.
Olivia H, absent.